Columbia presents Corwin.
Nobody has yet explained the case of Charles E. Gumbert. There have been many theories about him, and you may have read some of the magazine pieces attempting to debunk his experiences. But there are certain things that simply cannot be laughed off. And the case of Gumbert is one of them. It still baffles science. We'll tell you what we've been able to find out about it.
Tonight, in the last of a series of broadcasts for CBS, Norman Corwin brings you Charles Lawton and Elsa Lanchester in Gumbert. The musical score is conducted by Lud Gluskin. Charles Lawton and Elsa Lanchester in the Norman Corwin production of Gumbert.
I am Mrs. Charles E. Gumbert, the former Elsa MacFedris of Passaic, New Jersey. I married my husband after what I suppose one might call a whirlwind courtship. We hadn't known each other more than 2 months when he proposed to me.
It's not that I couldn't do without you, Miss MacFedris. I suppose I could. But I could do much better with you, and as you seem fond of me...
Oh, yes. I'm sure it would be no exaggeration to say that I am rather fond of you, Mr. Gumbert.
And why don't we get married? I won't always be a haberdashery salesman. In fact, Mr. Allison's already spoken of promoting me to the deferred department.
For the first 5 years of our marriage, Charles never showed any signs of his future greatness. At least none I could make out. He got along well at the department store, and we spent our spare time listening to the radio or playing gin rummy or reading. After he joined the Elks, he used to spend an evening a week at the lodge, and we also went to the movies often.
What's playing tonight, darling?
A triple feature, The Canterville Ghost, The Suspect, and It Started With Eve.
Oh, we mustn't be late for that. Let's do the dishes when we get home.
He was constantly reading the classics, too. For example, he read The Robe all the way through 3 times and Forever Amber 5 times. He was shy and retiring, and he knew his place in the home.
Yes, darling. It's just as you say, my sweet. Do you mind if I read a little longer, Elsa?
He was so timid, he would practically faint if he had to get up and speak before a meeting of salesmen or any such public gathering.
I'm happy to be able to report that total sales in the last 4 months, and the last 3 months since April, seem to have mislaid my notes somewhat, if you'll bear with me slightly.
And one other important thing I should tell you about Charles is that he could never carry a tune. He seemed to have no ear whatever for music.
Way down upon the Swanee River, far, far away.
It was this lack of a musical ear which made all the more surprising what happened on that unforgettable spring morning. We were sleeping, and around about 6 a.m, he awakened me.
Elsa, wake up.
What's the matter?
Do you hear a voice?
Yes, yours.
No, listen.
I don't hear a thing.
But I couldn't have dreamt it because I've been awake for a half hour. I heard a voice just as clear.
Charles E. Gumbert.
There it is. Listen.
I don't hear a thing.
Charles E. Gumbert.
Somebody is calling me.
You're hearing things.
Charles E. Gumbert, you have the honor of being the reincarnation of Niccolo Paganini. Niccolo Paganini.
Charles, what's come over you? You look so strange.
Now look here, who are you? What are you doing in my bed?
Are you talking in your sleep, darling?
Aren't you being fairly bold for a chambermaid? Get along and fetch my breakfast and let's have no more of this impertinence.
What do you mean, Charles? Oh, dear, I don't like that peculiar look in your eyes. Oh, my.
Stop wringing your hands and remove yourself to the kitchen at once, do you hear? Go now, get along!
I'll call a doctor right away. Oh, this is awful.
Have my violin here alongside my breakfast so I can put down my coffee and pick up my music.
Violin, did you say?
You she-clod, have you never heard of my violin? Violin! Violin! Yes! Violin!
Charles, are you sure you're feeling
me? Take that, you idiot!
Oh, you tried to hit me.
Violin!
Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin! Violin
Hetney, and with the vase Alice Nielsen gave us for her wedding present.
Breakfast, breakfast, and my violin.
Yes, Charles, yes. Breakfast and your violin.
I thought Charles had gone quite mad, but in order to humor him until I could call for help, I quickly got out of the cedar closet the old violin which my Uncle Angus had left me years ago because he had nobody else to leave it to.
About time. Here, give it to me. Seems to me I have better instruments than this. Where is the Guarnerius?
Guarnerius?
Must you forever repeat what I say? Guarnerius, Joseph Guarnerius, where?
I could try to reach him on the telephone.
Oh, you stupid, hopeless wench, clear out! I want to play.
Very well. I'll get out. I have to say, in all honesty, that I was terrified by the way Charles handled that violin without ever taking a lesson. I was certain as I stood listening outside his door that a demon had got into him. Especially when he called for me after a while.
Darling.
He seemed to have forgotten that he chased me out of the chambermaid only a few minutes before.
Antonia, I am going to compose a whole series of caprices.
Some caprices, did you say?
For you.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Lovely. Ah, of loveliness, Antonia, you are the epitome of the lightest flower. You bear yourself like a proud Sicilian hollyhock. Oh, you smell of spring.
It's sweetheart soap you're smelling, and the name is Elsa.
You're such a giddy girl sometimes with your little jokes. Here, let me fondle your foot.
Charles Gumpert, what on earth? Stop tickling my feet.
Antonio, you grow more beautiful by the hour. Whether to fold my Guarnerius under my chin or hold you in my arms all day long is one of the most agonizing decisions a man could ever be required to make.
And right then and there he seized me and kissed me rather wildly. Like in that perfume ad, you know. To be perfectly frank, I began to wonder whether he was just coming to his senses rather than losing them. He became very dashing and quite a lover. And I gave up all idea that he might be insane and made breakfast for him every morning. He made off he'd never heard of his job at the department store and did nothing but play on the violin and make love to me. And then one day he decided it was time for him to give a concert. So he had me go to Carnegie Hall in New York to see Mr. Carnegie. There was nobody there by that name, but a man told me.
Madam, if your husband plays as wonderfully as you say, the first thing he should do is sign an agent or a manager. He'll have no trouble getting concert dates.
Well, that's what I did. I had this manager listen to Charles, and he got so excited that within no time, Charles was all over the papers as a sensational discovery. And then they arranged a big concert for him. Well, to put it mildly, I'll never forget that night as long as I live. Everybody was there, and my picture was taken by photographers with flash bulbs and devices of that sort. And then, at last, Charles came out. And he went into his first number on the program.
Violin in my hand. Elsa! Elsa!
Elsa!
report of his concert in the newspapers was treated so humorously that, as you can well imagine, he became the victim of coarse jokes and the cause of much laughter. And even back in Passaic, I should say, especially in Passaic, he was hooted at by ruffians on street corners.
Why don't you try the trumpet, Gumpert?
That, as I see it, is none of your concern.
And rude children on our street corners made up rhymes about him.
Little fiddle piddle, answer me a riddle. Who plays the fiddle and stops in the middle? Dumpy Gumpy Gumpert, that is who. Feel plenty stinks, and so do you.
Poor Charles. He took it hard.
Elsa.
Yes, Charles?
I tell you, it's getting to be more than I can bear. Look at this.
What is it now?
Well, it's Winchell. He says here that I performed like a pagan nincompoop.
Is that good or bad?
Oh, it's bad, of course. Don't you know what a nincompoop means?
Yes, but I've never heard the phrase pagan nincompoop before. What is Mr. Winchell's point, darling?
Oh, never mind, Elsa. Well, the fact is that we'll never live this down here in Passaic. We'll just have to move. There's no other way out. We'll just have to move.
So we just had to move. We moved to Chicago, where Charles got a job in the complaint department of a water company. Things went along fairly well, and after a while, Charles seemed better. Although, I rather missed the passionate outbursts of his musical period, if you know what I mean. And then one night, while we were at dinner, he was saying...
And the young woman named Jane Bookbinder called up and wanted to know whether we were contemplating adding water to the chlorine in the drinking pipe. So I said, well, now, miss, I said, if it weren't for the chlorine...
Charles E. Gumpert.
Yes, Charles. Go on. If it weren't for the chlorine...
There it is again.
There's what again?
Charles E. Gumpert. You have the honor to be the reincarnation of the spirit of Caius Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar.
Charles? Julius, what are you staring at? There's nothing on that wall at all.
Out Kaiser. Out nihil.
What's that again, dear?
I just said either a Caesar or nothing.
What a clever answer. And what did Miss Bookbinder say to that?
Cogito ergo sum fronti nulla fides.
Silly of her to try and win you over with baby talk. I hope you gave her a piece of your mind.
I just said I think... Therefore, I am. No reliance can be placed on appearances.
I warrant that stopped her.
Calpurnia?
Who? What?
Calpurnia.
Are you referring to the Golden State, to Hollywood, Calpurnia?
No, I am talking to you, Calpurnia, my dear wife.
Chuckles. There you go again with your silly talk.
Are you with me? There is much to be done.
Like cleaning the house?
Cleaning the house, indeed. Well said. In partibus infidelium. Carpe diem. Calpurnia, the state is overruled, is ruled by democratic weaklings. There are men in the Senate who believe in representative government. No tyrant is safe. I must be up and about in the world. The house will be cleaned indeed. Where are my passes? Where's my toga?
I think you left them in the bathroom.
Mummus is the word. I shall meet tonight with friends, Chicagoans, countrymen.
Oh, well, Jaffies are coming over, and also Mr. Ginsfogel.
Out
and...
Kaiser, out nihil.
I was never quite sure whether in saying that he was referring to the German Kaiser or to Henry J., the shipbuilder, but he used to say it quite often, mostly to himself.
Out Kaiser, out nihil.
At any rate, Charles began to act very strangely. He fell in with desperate characters who called themselves Silver Shirts, Black Legionnaires, and Christian Fronters. He said they were his people because he was the original fascist, and if he could rally them together and knock some sense into them, they would eventually make him Emperor of the Americas. It seems absurd now, of course, but at the time, I must confess, the thought of being an Empress of the Americas did rather attract me. Well, one night, I went with Charles to a secret meeting. I was astonished to find out what a forceful character he was and what colorful lies he could make up.
Fools, you are all hands and stomachs, slogans and shirts. Forever shooting off your mouths at Captain Tandem Vulgus.
What do you mean, Gumpert?
What we need is action, not filibusters. Out, Kaiser. Out, Nihil.
Who's that?
Did I not drive Bibulus from the forum and make him a prisoner in his own house?
No, kid. You done that?
Did I wait around for resolutions to be passed before selling the people of the Aduacti wholesale into slavery?
Well, if you're so smart, Gumbert, what do you propose to do in the way of action?
Well, since you're so stupid, tempora mutanta nos et mutamur in illis.
I'm with you.
Me too.
For instance, when I was in a tight spot, once I massacred in cold blood the whole Senate of the Venetii. And I also had Acco, chief of the Senenes, flogged to death.
Hey, you know your way around, Gumpert. You've been mixed up in them gang wars.
Gumpert's got background. No question of that.
Yeah, background. That's what he's got.
Background, you pipsqueak fascist, you. What a tub of sawdust you had in Italy.
Benny was pretty good while he lasted.
Hung up by the heels like a stuck pig. And Hitler. He wasn't fit to touch the hem of my toga.
Oh, is that so?
Do you realize that I twice crossed the English Channel and invaded Britain?
When was this?
Post hoc ergo propter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about that.
I was named dictator four times.
Okay, Gumbert, we know you're good, so what do you want us to do?
Follow a man of decision. Follow a man of action. Follow me!
Hey, he's got something there.
Okay. We follow you.
Yeah. But follow the leader.
All right, then. Listen. We organize first as the Toger Shirts. Next, we enlist the support of a great newspaper.
We already got the support of a great newspaper.
I know the one you mean, and it's better than nothing. But that's only a beginning.
All right. What do we do after that?
Then you build a statue of me and carry it.
Wait a minute, boss. Wait a minute. Where are we going to get the dough to build you a statue?
Where did the Romans get the money to build a statue of me in the Temple of Quirinus, the one with the legend to the unconquerable god?
Charles E. Gumpert.
If you small-time, quizzling type shyster fascists would only begin thinking in terms of the big leagues, you'd be getting somewhere. Think of Tyson. Krupp. Mitsubishi. I.G. Farben.
We never heard of half of them guys.
What a pack of blithering, craven, gutless, obsolescent jerks you are.
Who, us?
I am almost tempted not to put my master proposal before you.
Oh, what's your proposition, Chief?
Charles E. Gumpert.
What I am proposing is fascism. Under another name.
Good.
We call ourselves the Confederated Volunteer Protectors and Defenders of America the Beautiful Incorporated. We'll start by going to work on the youth and appealing to returning veterans. And then...
Gumpert, you have sunk too low to be tolerated by the mortal shade of Caesar. Gumpert, you are Gumpert.
Yeah, go on, Gumpert. We're waiting. We're all with you.
I was about to say, gentlemen, that sales in the last quarter... No, that doesn't seem to be right. I seem to have mislaid my notes somewhat. Would you please bear with me,
gentlemen? Come on, cut the stalling, Gumpert.
Yeah. Continue where you left off.
Well, I seem to have forgotten just where we were.
Hey, who do you think you're kidding?
Let's get to the question.
Oh, was there a question before the meeting?
Yeah, I got a question. Look, who are we going to support in the next congressional election?
Why, I should suppose the most honest men we can
honest
find.
Honest
men, huh? That is, men who believe, as we all do, in good, sound, democratic government and the Bill of Rights, so to speak.
Why, you dirty red double-crosser, you.
Did I say something wrong?
Elsa!
I nursed him slowly back to health.
Elsa, darling, the hot water bottle's gotten cold again.
And I made him go to the country for a thorough rest.
What a peculiar taste the spring water has. What do you suppose it is?
Unchlorinated.
Oh, yes, that's it.
And after a while, his broken ribs knitted together and his fractured skull healed up and he was as good as ever. He began to take a lively interest in his surroundings once again.
Tomorrow, darling, let's visit the stockyards.
And he was doing fine until... ping. Same thing happened as before. He fancied he heard a voice. Only this time he got the idea he was the reincarnation of an old Yorkshire farmhand named George Guggins.
I've somewhat to say to thee, Elsa Gumpert. I'm that happy thou shows thee sense properly, understanding. By gum, thou's been a good wife to me.
This lasted only a couple of days, and he was back to normal. But then, all at once, he fancied he was Hugo Oliver Mumford, Jr., a Canadian flautist of the latter part of the 19th century, who apparently never quite made the grade because Charles drove me nearly to distraction playing the thing. Then he was William Schmidt, an 18th century kleptomaniac from Alsace-Lorraine.
Elsa, look what I find in my pocket. Jewels. And this afternoon, again, I am going to visit Marshall Field's department store.
Well, about this time, I began to wonder whether perhaps it wasn't getting to be, if you'll forgive the expression, slightly immoral to be married to so many different reincarnations, one after the other. So I went to see Dr. Mishkin, who was recommended to me by my next-door neighbor. And Dr. Mishkin referred me to a psychoanalyst named Dr. Billard.
And does your husband continue to experience these hallucinations, Mrs. Gumpert?
Yes.
But since the Caesar episode, he seems to have fancied himself a series of considerably lesser people. Have you any idea why this is?
No, Doctor, no. Do you suppose he's being punished for failing as Paganini and Caesar?
Well, we psychologists are not given to jumping at conclusions. This must be very carefully analyzed. Could you possibly bring your husband in to see us?
Well, he's busy now with his marbles.
You mean he's actually playing with marbles?
No, sir, he's sculpting. He's the reincarnation of a gentleman called Michelangelo this week.
Good heavens. Mrs. Gumpert, I think you should know that your husband is a most remarkable case. And I should like to examine him in the company of two of my colleagues, Doctors Ashworth and Berenberg.
Very well. If I can only get him over here, Dr. Billard, I'll try.
Please do. It's most important. The symptoms would indicate paranoia. But, of course, some schizophrenics...
I waited until Charles was discharged from being Michelangelo. And when he was Gumpert once again, I induced him to come with me to visit these psychoanalysts. I'll never forget that day. All the way over on the interurban, he was very silent and thoughtful. Never opened his mouth beyond saying, rather warm, isn't it, a couple of times.
Rather warm, isn't it?
I think it's the heat, more than the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Charles E. Gumpert. You are the incarnation of the spirit of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud.
Temperature must be up around in the 90s, wouldn't you say, our friend?
Yes, warm.
And so we got to the doctor's office, and they sat him down and began to ask him a great many questions. He answered them with a sly kind of smile on his face. And after a while, I could see that the doctors were beginning to feel very uncomfortable.
Now, Mr. Gumpert, to get back to our questioning... When you hear these voices, aren't you ever afraid? I mean, afraid?
A most interesting slip, Dr. Billard. Are you by any chance nervously under the apprehension that Dr. Freud is somewhere in this office and perhaps overhearing you?
Not at all, not at all. Now let's get on with the subject.
Come along, be frank, for the sake of science, Dr. Billard.
Yes, Billard, Gumpert has a point there. Do you harbor any such apprehension?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes.
What about you, Dr. Berenberg?
So do I.
And the same for you, Dr. Ashworth?
This is really astonishing. I, too.
Not at all astonishing. In fact, Dr. Ashworth, I call your attention to the lapse in reading which you made when you were examining the transcript of your colleague's interview of the other day with the good Mrs. Gumpert here.
My lapse in reading?
Yes, quite. Where it reads... Figment of the imagination. You unconsciously said Sigmund of the imagination.
Yes, I noticed that too, Ashworth.
Once again demonstrating that you gentlemen have had Sigmund Freud on your minds ever since I first stopped your questioning 10 minutes ago to correct a misquotation from Dr. Jung's work on the psychology of dementia praecox. Do you recall that?
You're quite right, Dr. Gumpert.
I mean, Mr. Gumpert.
So, willy-nilly, in defiance of all logic and judgment, you are unable to put down the suspicion that here, sitting before you in the person and body of Charles Evan Gumpert, is the spirit and mind of the late Sigmund Freud. Am I right or wrong?
Why, never in all my experience.
Can he, the man is
right. We're forced to admit you're correct in assuming that this is so.
Well, now you have something to think over.
Gentlemen, I must go now. This has been most pleasant. And before I go, I should like to recommend to you, Dr. Berenberg, the essay by Buschenschutz entitled Traum und Traumdeutung im Altertum.
But Dr. Gumpertree, we haven't yet...
Just a moment.
Dr. Billard may be interested in pages 60 to 94 of Bleuler's book entitled Affectivity, Suggestibility, Paranoia. I'm speaking of the Halle Marhold edition published in 1960.
Now, just a moment. Let me write that down.
But you're not leaving, are you, Mr. Freud? Dr. Gumpworth. Oh, I mean Mr. Gumpworth.
And to you, Dr. Ashworth, may I recommend a rereading of the basic writings of Sigmund Freud? Good day. Come along, Elsa, my dear.
There isn't really very much more to tell. After the Freud business, the psychoanalysts took such a deep interest in Charles, they began paying us social visits and bringing all kinds of scientific gentlemen with them.
This is Sir Joshua Losey Cleghorn, the eminent archaeologist.
How do you do, Sir Joshua? You seem well preserved.
How do you do?
And General Wisner, inventor of dehydrated water.
Charmed. Will you come in, gentlemen?
Charles completely baffled them with his knowledge until he stopped being Sigmund Freud and became Samson. He let his hair grow until it hung over his eyes like a sheepdog, and he went around lifting things, including me.
Light as a feather. No substance. Now hold on tight, Delilah, while I give you the warning.
Stop it, or I'll scream. I'm dizzy. Put me down, put me down.
There. One hand. There's nothing I can't lift. Sometimes I have a strange yen to push in a couple of walls. Just for fun.
I wish you had a yen to go to the barber's and get a haircut.
Look here. One hand.
Charles, put that piano down.
Dilly, do you suppose they could use my sort of talent in vaudeville or pictures?
I don't rightly know whether I can bear to tell the rest. You see, just as the doctors were ready to move right in on us and study Charles at close hand, he became Admiral John Paul Jones and insisted on joining the Navy.
Anchors away, my lads. Anchors away.
He slipped away one night and enlisted as a CB under an assumed name. I haven't heard from him since. The only way I had of knowing he was alive and well was the news of the big naval victories which kept coming in from the Pacific. That must have been Charles. I could just imagine him commanding a task force.
We will attack in force at dawn. All men at battle stations, anchors away! Heave the capstan and flim the futtocks. Damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead! Fire when ready!
Now that the war is over, I wonder if perhaps someone might help me out.
How do you mean, Mrs. Gumpert?
If anybody listening into this should by any chance run into a sailor, a short, fat man with a thoughtful expression on his face who knows all about selling neckties and chlorinating water, would they please let me know? My name is Mrs. Elsa McFedries Gumpert, and I can be reached care of my brother, Humbert C. McFedries, of 261 East Fine Schreiber Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I would be ever so grateful.
Listening to Charles Lawton and Elsa Lanchester in Gumpert, a new comedy written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin for CBS as the last in his series of broadcasts under the familiar title Columbia Presents Corwin. The musical score was conducted by Lud Gluskin. David Priscina performed as the reincarnated Paganini. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.